What is up, my friends? Welcome back to University of Adversity. I'm your host, Lance Isios. Today, we have a 4-time best-selling author, international keynote speaker, founder of Keto Camp, and the host of the Top 15 podcast, the Metabolic Freedom Podcast. We have my dear friend, Ben Azadi, joining us today. He's got a brand new book out called Metabolic Freedom, a 30-day guide to restore your metabolism, heal hormones, and burn fat. This is an incredible conversation. Ben is legit. He's the real deal. He's a good friend of mine. It's the second time he's on. I think he was on back in 2020 or 2019. I've been on his show twice. Now he's been on mine twice. And I love the guy. So looking forward to sharing this with you guys. If you do get value from this, share it with somebody you feel needs it. You know, our health's important for all areas of life, especially when we're going through adversity, to prepare ourselves for challenging moments. We got to be healthy. We got to be taking care of our body. So this one is one not to miss. Enjoy this episode with my dear friend, Ben Azadi. What is the biggest health challenge we face as a society in 2025?
It's very different than what it was maybe 20 or 30 years ago. You see, we have the power in our cell phone, as much power and information in our cell phone, more power and information in our cell phone than the president of the United States had 30 years ago. So what we're dealing with is not lack of information, but way too much information, misinformation, confusion. How do you know what's the right advice? How do you know this is actually healthy for you? It's going to help you lose weight, prevent diseases. It's hard to know. So we're dealing with a lot of misinformation. It's overwhelming for people. It's confusing. And I believe we're starving, drowning in information and starving for true wisdom. So, you know, the biggest pitfall is just spreading yourself too thin and following all these authorities. And I think it's important to find someone that you resonate with, their personality, go deep into their tips, their philosophy, their research, and give it a shot. See if it works for you. You know, one of the things that's huge misinformation out there that I've experienced being in this space for 17 years now, when it comes to fat loss, for example, it's the old dogma of if you want to lose weight, just cut your calories and exercise more, get into a calorie deficit. That's a huge misinformation piece right now because it doesn't work. It only works short term. And I learned this the hard way, doing seminars and workshops. I used to call it the science of fat loss and teach people how to get into a calorie deficit. I thought I was so clever because it did work in the beginning, but then the metabolism will match the food energy coming in and it slows down. And you could only cut your calories so much to the point where the metabolism slows down. So it's not about calories. It's about inflammation. It's about hormones. And if we just go back to the basics, it keeps it really simple for people. Like, what are the fundamentals of getting healthy? What did our ancestors do? What did we do for hundreds of years where we were healthy? Because the last 50 years, we made a dramatic shift. So looking at some of the changes that we've made in the last 50 years, I think doing the complete opposite will get you down the right path, right? So we've been taught eat low fat, count your calories, excessively exercise. And it's the complete opposite. It's really not about that. It's about the quality of your calories, not the quantity. It's about the fundamentals of health and wellness, sleep, stress. You talk a lot about this in your podcast, Lance, like the mental resilience, the mental stress, what I call the mental six pack. So I think going back to basics will help kind of ground you and then just start taking the necessary steps. It doesn't require a whole bunch of change. It really doesn't. I have the philosophy of one tweak a week, right? Master a habit, build, get momentum, build another habit, stack that habit. When you make these progressive changes, now you start to experience results, you start to get momentum, and it makes it a lot easier for you. So I would say that, you know, we need to get away from all this information out there and stick with what has worked for hundreds of years.
So what do you say when you have pushback about the calories in, calories out? Because, you know, you have the influencers like the Lane Nortons, and there's some really loud people now that have kind of rose up during, you know, all of this. And there's a lot of shit talking on social media. You see a lot of it, right? Like, but you have the different camps of people, and it's like, okay, like there's, I get what he's saying. I get what people that are talking about calories are saying as far as like, you kind of have to pay attention to them, but you don't, they're not everything. But like, what do you say when you got, you must get that pushback. You must get of that course. From like the real, like raw, you know, the people that just want like raw solid data for every single thing. And it has to be like just this, there's no room for, there's no room for any question. It's like so black and white. Like, how have you dealt with that? Because I get angry when I see it on social media. I'm like, I'm like, expand your mind a little bit. Like, just think outside the box, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, I've gotten a lot of heat about that. Lane Norton, for example, as you mentioned, has made several videos about me. Maybe I think 9 total now since like 2018. He's just gone after me. You know, if cutting calories worked for weight loss, we wouldn't have almost 50% of adults, or not just adults, but adults and children in the United States being obese, right? Almost 50%. It's really, calories do matter. It is true that they have a point, but they're not the most important thing. They're a distraction. Mm. I think it really boils down to your premise on how the human body operates. My premise is that God has built the body to be self-healing. And as long as you remove the interference, it will heal itself. The premise of calories in versus calories out has a different premise. Their philosophy is we need to lose weight to get healthy. But the body doesn't work that way. We get healthy to lose weight. The weight loss is a side effect of good health. So calories matter, but they're not important. What's way more important is cell metabolism, hormones, inflammation. I'll give you an example here to make it really understandable. If someone ate 800 calories of processed foods, let's say Snickers and donuts and processed carbohydrates, but it's 800 calories, so they're still in a deficit, versus somebody who consumed 800 calories, so equal calories, but it came from whole food, steak, eggs, protein, fat, all the stuff we love to eat, Lance. Mm. Completely different metabolic response afterwards, right? The person eating the processed carbs, although they're in a calorie deficit, will have low energy levels. They'll still be inflamed. They'll still struggle with weight loss versus the person eating the protein and fat. They'll have amazing energy levels, low inflammation. They will lose weight. They'll feel good, right? So it's not about the food they're eating. It's about the metabolic response from the food. So quality over quantity, it's really important. And it's tricky because when somebody does go in a calorie deficit, they will lose weight. It works short term. Mm. It doesn't work long term. The metabolism starts to slow down to match the calories coming in. And we've seen this time after time. I've seen it with hundreds of students when I used to teach this method. And we've also seen it with the TV show, The Biggest Loser, which I talk about in the book, Metabolic Freedom. Yeah, I share some studies on that show. And for those who don't remember, this was a really popular TV show in the United States where they took these obese individuals, put them on a really strict regimen of cutting their calories, excessive exercise, and they lost hundreds of pounds. They celebrated them on the final episode of the season. But what happened next was that most of them, 90% plus of them, gained the weight back. And a large percentage of them actually gained more weight than when they started the show because they destroyed their metabolism. They wrecked their hormones. They were hungry all the time. There's got to be a better way. You see, the body doesn't have any mechanisms in place to count calories. We're not a calculator. We're not a math equation. We're a very, very complex chemistry lab. Mm. So the fact that this is really great news because you don't have to rely on willpower. You don't have to measure food, count calories. In fact, it's easy. You just make small changes that lower inflammation, balance hormones, and the weight comes off. And the cool thing about doing it this way, it stays off. And I'm proof of that. Being obese for 20 plus years, I lost 80 pounds. And that was 17 years ago. I've kept the weight off and I don't count a single calorie. And I've worked with thousands of students all across the world where we follow the same premise and they've lost a ton of weight and they keep the weight off. So it's just a distraction. We're going to continue to see these debates out there versus calories in versus calories out and hormones, the whole conversation, but it's really about hormones and inflammation. It's not about calories, especially long-term.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of ego attached to these ideologies that are learned in these schools of nutrition. And it's like this old way and they put so much of their like identity around it. And if anything challenges that, it's, you know, and you see it and, you know, it makes sense, bro. Like in nature, you don't see animals counting calories. Like you know, they're eating and then that's enough. You know, when you're eating good food, you know, like I've tested it out. I've eaten lots of eggs. I've eaten meat. I'm like, okay, there's a lot of calories here. And I don't, like, it doesn't make a difference. Like, it's not like, even though I'm eating a ton of calories, it's not making me fat. Like, it's like my body knows what to do with real food. You know? Like, it makes sense.
Like, exactly, it makes, right, bro.
It makes sense that we, our bodies know what to do, the intelligence. It's like, yes. Oh, real food. Oh, okay. Like, let's, and it's like you did the carnivore diet for a while, right? And it's crazy what happens because there's like no fiber, but it's almost like your body knows, it's like you're using all of that. And there's not a lot of waste like there is with, like, you know, when you're eating a ton of veggies, right? What was your experience with that?
Yeah. And I know you've done some carnivore diet experiments as well. I love the carnivore diet. I've done many experiments with it, and I'm primarily animal based, probably 90% carnivore these days, 10% not. But, you know, my experience was great. I didn't have to worry about hunger. I was so full and satiated. I was eating all this protein and fat. I felt great. Inflammation dropped, got better sleep, better recovery in between workouts. I shed some excess body fat I didn't even know I had to shed. Like, my body just did what it needed to do, like, to your point.
Yeah, you leaned out in your face even. I noticed that. You leaned out in your face.
Yeah, exactly. Face, body fat percentage, you know, more visible abs, all that good stuff. And it was enjoyable. And I was just eating protein and fat, you know, from animal products. And I did it. The last experiment was for 90 straight days. And I did lab work on day one. I did a stool test on day one. And I tested again on day 90. Like, everything improved. And I felt incredible without a single piece of vegetable, no fiber. And what was interesting is that the gut microbiome tests showed that there were bacteria that, you know, adjusted to the changes. There was no fiber and vegetables. So I developed different bacteria to make up for that loss of the fiber that would support the bacteria. The body just adapts. It's incredible. And I didn't count a single calorie and I felt incredible, right? This is metabolic freedom. This is exactly why I wrote the book. Like, we don't have to worry about our energy levels dropping and having to eat a piece of candy or a snack to sustain energy levels or count calories or rely on willpower. None of that is required to get healthy and to lose weight. It's really just a matter of supporting your hormones and inflammation. And carnivore is a great way to do that.
Yeah. What was the reason? Because you, why did you go on that though? Was there, because you were exposed to some mold too, right? Was there like a, was that like a reason to like kind of detox? Or like, I was curious about that. Like, what made you, were you just testing it out or was it something that happened from that? Like,
I already had planned to do the carnivore experiment. Originally I was going to do it just for 30 days and it did coincide, as you just said, with the mold exposure that we had. And it just happened to coincide with that. So it was perfect because I was detoxing the mold. I got out of the environment with the mold. I was able to also put my body in a really anti-inflammatory state with carnivore. But when I first set out to do it, it was supposed to be 30 days. And I said, I don't know if 30 days is enough data in terms of like changes. So I extended it to 90 days and it gave me some really good data. Like, I made a whole video about it and I just wanted to show people, like, it's not what you think. Mm-hmm. I had no fiber, no vegetables, and my gut microbiome improved. I lowered my risk of heart disease. I did all the markers to look at risk for heart disease. I even had a heart surgeon, Dr. Philip Avadia, review my before and after lab results as it pertains to heart disease risk. And he said, essentially, on day one, you were at low risk for heart disease. And on day 90 after carnivore, you were even at lower risk of heart disease, right?
Wow.
So it just flies in the face of what people think getting health. Like, it's the opposite of what people think in terms of getting healthy.
Yeah. Love it, man. Okay, let's talk about seed oils. Now, obviously, like, there's some areas here, like, I'm like, all right, we got to talk about this. Why are seed oils bad? And what are the main seed oils that cause the most problems?
This is a big topic. And I'm glad that it's getting more popular. You know, I've been preaching the message on seed oils since 2016. Now it's really, really popular. Well, the food supply in the United States, about 80% of our food supply contain these seed oils. They're also called vegetable oils. And the reason why they're so inflammatory is because the way that they're processed. When we think about these seed oils, they're very, very unstable fats. Mm-hmm. And it's just the chemical nature of them. They contain a lot of these double bonds. And that's why they're called polyunsaturated fats. The word poly means many. So it contains many double bonds. And the significance of that is that the more double bonds these fats have, the more reactive they are to heat, pressure, and oxygen. Okay, when we look at how they're processed, they use heat, pressure, and oxygen, not to mention chemical agents because they smell rancid because they are rancid. Then they're bottled up. They're put into your grocery store shelves, and the American Heart Association gives them their nice heart healthy stamp of approval, but they're the complete opposite of heart healthy. They actually contribute to heart disease, cancer, weight loss resistance, and even diabetes because they're processed in such an inflammatory way. So when we consume them, because we're consuming a lot of them, 80% of our food supply have them, they start to oxidize our cells. Mm-hmm. And the analogy I gave in the book is biting into an apple.
Right.
If I bit into an apple and left that apple on the counter and came back several hours later and then looked at the apple, it starts to turn brown. It's essentially rusting, oxidizing. This is exactly what's happening to our cells when we eat these oils. They're getting embedded into our cell membranes and they're oxidizing and they're staying there for a very long time. The half-life of these oils, Lance, is 680 days.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, if we stopped eating them today, and I'll give your audience an entire list in a minute, if we remove them today and stopped eating them today, about 2 years later, half of them will still be in your body creating inflammation. They're so bad for you that arguably they're as inflammatory as smoking cigarettes. There's actually a study I put in the book from a gentleman named Dr. Martin Grootveld, where he analyzed McDonald's French fries, which are fried in vegetable oils, and he took a 5 ounce serving of McDonald's French fries, which is about 25 large French fries. And then he measured something called aldehyde content in the French fries. Aldehydes are cancer causing, they're carcinogenic. When you smoke a tobacco cigarette, you produce aldehydes. That's how smoking cigarettes leads to cancer. It's the aldehydes. And the study showed that it produces these French fries and vegetable oil produces the same amount of aldehydes as smoking tobacco cigarettes. Essentially, when you eat just one French fry cooked in vegetable oil, it's equivalent to smoking a tobacco cigarette. That is why, one of many reasons why they are so inflammatory for you. So we want to avoid the following fats: canola oil, corn oil, cottonseed oil, soybean oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, rice bran oil, and grapeseed oil. These are all classified as vegetable oils. So ask, you know, your server at the restaurant if they cook with them. You know, I always do that, Lance. Make sure you tell them that you're allergic and look at the ingredients list. Go to your pantry, do an audit, throw those out and replace them with the fats that actually build your cell membranes, build your metabolism, help you burn fat by lowering inflammation. These are called saturated fats and monounsaturated fats. So butter, ghee, beef tallow, duck fat, lard from healthy pigs, avocado oil, coconut oil, olive oil. These are healthy fats. And there, a lot of these fats are the fats that have been vilified for so many years, but in fact, they are the most important fats that you could consume. So that little swap right there goes a long way. It'll help you break through weight loss resistance. It'll help you have more energy. It'll help you feel good. It'll extend your lifespan. So it's a really important topic because these seed oils are everywhere.
Yeah. And I love that you shared that because, I mean, we both been aware of these for years now, right? Like I remember the first time about seed oils. I mean, even like, I think even Dr. Mercola talking about them back in, he was talking about using coconut oil like freaking years ago, you know, like I don't even, maybe like 2012, 2013 even, you know, and then, and then it slowly, and then like the Mark Sisson's kind of people started to talk about it, Dave Asprey, and it started to make its way. But yeah, and then like, you know, 2016, 2017 was when it was like, okay. And but you can actually, I personally can feel it in my joints when I eat that stuff. Like it wasn't just like it's not just something that I follow or that I even recommend to people because I'm told to. I can actually feel the difference. Like, you know what I mean? When you start to, right?
Absolutely.
When you know how you feel, you don't know until you remove things, right? You don't know how unhealthy or how shitty you feel until you take it out and then put it back in. It's like when you don't eat that stuff for a while and you go and eat at a restaurant, immediately it's like, oh, my joints, like old sports injuries start to like flare up. And it's like, what, how, what is going on? And it's the only thing that makes sense. And it's like this, it's crazy because people, there's people that still push back on this topic about seed oils. And it's like, why? Like, why are you so against this? like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand it. Why are people so against it? Do you think they're getting paid off by these companies? Like, what is the deal? Like, why can't they just be open to this? I don't understand.
That's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it. Some of them are getting paid off. The American Heart Association does. They're in bed with big pharma and big food. So there's definitely some corruption there, a lot of corruption there. Then there are some influencers. I mean, we saw it over the last few years. There were some articles that came out that these influencers were paid to push a certain agenda.
Yeah.
Seed oils, vaccines, et cetera. So that does happen. But then you have those who are just not really looking at the research. You have, because there's a big difference between processed seed oils and the unprocessed seed oils. And a lot of the studies that are referenced saying seed oils are fine for you are looking at unprocessed seed oils that are organic, cold pressed, used for salad dressings and dips, not heated. And those could be fine in small amounts. But 90% plus of the seed oils out there are the processed variety. Right. So you can manipulate the data and show it's not bad for you. Look, these studies show it's healthy for you, but they're not showing, the studies are not showing the processed variety that people are consuming that's everywhere. So yeah, there's going to be back and forth. And you know, it was last year, I remember the seed oil trend was labeled as like a conservative thing, right? It's so stupid that they brought politics into it. So whatever they can do to, you know, dissuade people or confuse people, there's a lot of money to be made from sick people. That's the truth. A cured patient is a lost customer. And if you remove seed oils, you're going to cure yourself. You're going to get healthier and you're going to get off medication. But you know, there's a lot of money to be made from medication. So there's going to be pushback for it.
Yeah. And didn't Canada start canola oil? I heard it.
I think they did. I think you're right.
You're used in cars or something. It's crazy,
yeah, it's
man.
It's awful, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and it's crazy that you're right, because how it becomes political. Like if you exercise, if you're the word, you couldn't even say seed oils. Like what?
Yeah. I had like a couple of Instagram videos. They got false information from just seed oil content. It's crazy.
Dude, that's wild, man. What have like, since those early days, you know, other than calories, what have you changed your mind on in the last, let's say 3-4 years? Like, what have you changed your mind on as far as, you know, metabolic freedom or just in general with what you may have thought one way when you were starting keto camp, you know, keto and all that. And then now you've kind of, you know, turned it into metabolic freedom. There must have been some changes or some different thoughts that come up. Is there anything that you've changed your mind on that you can think of?
Yeah, several things. It's a great question. And absolutely. And it's important to your point earlier, Lance, about the ego thing. You know, this is the calories in versus calories out method. Like that's been your philosophy and you realize that you're wrong. You have to admit that you're wrong and change your philosophy, right? So I like when people unlearn and relearn, and it's okay when somebody's preaching a message 5 years ago that's different than they preach today, because they constantly unlearn and relearn, like I have been as well. And a couple of things that come to mind is protein. I used to be, I wouldn't say fearful of protein, but I used to tell my students to, you know, moderate to low protein. It's keto. It's really more of a high fat approach, not a high protein approach. And I actually think protein is the most important macronutrient. Actually, it's a strong focus in the book, Metabolic Freedom, because protein does amazing things in the body. It helps you feel full and satiated. It preserves lean muscle, builds lean muscle, which is very important for fat loss, insulin sensitivity, longevity. And a lot of people are protein they're deficient in protein. So I actually like a strong focus on protein, with most people getting about a gram of protein per pound of their ideal body weight. So if their goal weight is, let's say they weigh 180 pounds right now, but their goal weight is 130 pounds, then I would advise them on most days to get 130 grams of protein. So the amount of their ideal body weight in grams of protein, and actually lowering their fat once they're in ketosis, because the body could use its own fat stores to get its fat requirements versus eating so much fat, which could actually slow down the progress of fat loss. So that's one thing I learned. And this, another thing is, you know, when I first started getting into keto back in 2013, 2014, I was all about it. Like keto forever. This is the way you got to live your life. It's the greatest thing in the world. But now I don't believe in long-term continuous ketosis. I believe in metabolic freedom, like flexing in and out of ketosis, using it as a tool, but not the only tool. So I try not to be dogmatic about keto and other things out there. So those are two, you know, things that I definitely have changed my mind on. I'm sure there's more, but those are the first two that came to mind.
Yeah, I love that, bro, because I believe that that is the sign of real intelligence. You think away because you learned, but then something else comes along and you're open to it. You learn, you go, huh, interesting. Okay, well, this makes more sense to who I am now. So I'm going to now say this because that's what evolution is as a human. That's what we should be doing. And honestly, bro, that is how I have trusted, how I've built the trust of who I follow online the last 10 years. You know, like the Rob Wolfs of the world, the people that aren't afraid to go, hey, you know what? That didn't work. Or I used to think that, but now I know this. And I'm like, yes. So I trust you more because you're willing to say, because we're human at the end of the day. You know, and same with Paul Saladino. People shit on that guy because he's changed his mind about not being carnivore and then having fruit. It's like, at least the person's willing to admit that they've learned new information. And nowadays it's like some people think that's a bad thing. Like, why would you want people to stay stuck in old ideologies if you learned new information? And I think that's so important to be able to admit that because we're all learning. We're all growing. And, you know, 10 years ago, things have changed a lot since then. and if you don't adapt or you don't learn anything by then, and you don't at least, you know, think a little bit different, I feel like it's kind of like, well, how can I trust this person? You know?
I agree with you. I have respect for Paul Saladino for, you know, making a pivot. I have respect for people who admit they're wrong, and that's what it's all about. You know, unlearn and relearn. We do the best we can with our experience and current research, and it's always changing. We don't want to put ourselves in a box. You know, that's why I'm with you, Lance. I respect those who make changes and pivot, and they explain why they're wrong, and here's what they believe to be true. And I'm sure some of the stuff that I'm sharing today, I might change my mind on maybe in 5 or 10 years. I know, let's see. But I'm open to making that change, that pivot, just whatever works, whatever will help humanity. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, because if your goal is to help the humans, then if you want to help humans, then, you know, it's about that. It's like, oh, okay, this can help more than what I thought before. So let's change that because this is actually better than that, what I used to think. If that's your goal, that's right. Or if it's your ego, because you don't want to be wrong, which we saw a lot of people still don't admit where they're wrong. And you know, to me nowadays, it's like, okay, well, I don't trust you on other things. Like I that's just the way it is. If that's the way you are about this, then it's hard for me to trust you on other things. And I think like nowadays that's so important with, because kind of going back to the way we started in the beginning, how do we figure out who to follow, right? What do they believe on other things? What are their values? Do they change their mind when they get new information? Because if they don't, I don't want to listen to them. I don't believe that. So yeah, it's important, man. I'm glad that you're like that too.
yeah, for sure, bro. You know, there's power in saying something like, I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. I used to think that saying I don't know made me feel like less of an authority, maybe weak in somebody's mind. And I used to maybe pretend to know something just to kind of feel like an authority many, many years ago. And I realized if I don't know the answer, like, I'm just going to say, I don't know. And you know, when I do know something, it holds more weight because they're going to, you know, believe me when I actually do know something and feel like I do know something. So it takes so much pressure off of you when you say you don't know. It's just the truth. I don't know. Let me do some research. Let me figure it out. Let me see what people are talking about this topic. And then when you do know something, you're more trusted because you actually admit when you don't know something. So it holds more weight when you actually admit you do know something. So for anybody who's creating content or working with clients and they ask you a question that you don't know the answer to, it takes pressure off of you when you say you don't know and maybe point them in the right direction or do some further research. So don't feel like you need to know everything. I sure do not know everything, and I'm constantly unlearning and relearning. It's part of the process.
Yeah. There's another kind of area I'd like to talk about, you know, and kind of share with the audience, man, is that, you know, we talked about it prior and I've said this before, is just your relentless dedication to your mission and your consistency over the years. And it's so inspiring, I think, to anybody that is wanting to create something and really, you know, just wondering how to do it. You have been somebody that has just been so consistent in showing up with, you know, content and YouTube and keeping messages simple and easily digestible. And you've been able to create this movement that is really inspiring, you know? And I guess for me, like what drives you? What keeps you wanting to, like, what is that inner fire that keeps you wanting to go down this path that helps you get up and create maybe on days you don't want to and show up over and over and over again? You're going on Instagram lives all the time. You're on the plane, you're flying and speaking at these huge conferences, these huge events. You're getting on documentaries. You're doing all this stuff. You know, how do you stay? How do you keep going? You know, like, it's because there's so many people that start, they don't see results, and then they quit. How did you get through those hurdles? You know, what advice do you have for people out there that see a guy like you and they're like, oh, I don't know if I could do that?
Thank you, Lance. I appreciate that. I appreciate those words, brother. Yeah, I know what I want. And most people, unfortunately, don't know what they want. They think they want something, but it's really what society has projected onto them. It's what the social standards have told them they should want this or do this. So I think the first thing is to find out what you really want, like what lights you up. When you find out what that is, and it could be what I'm doing, which is great, or it could be whatever it is for you. It's unique to you. But once you find out what it is, then you have all the energy, you have all the vitality, you have everything you need to do the consistent work. I really believe many people that are struggling with fatigue and they're tired all the time, they're not tired, they're uninspired. They're living a life not on purpose with their purpose. They're doing jobs they hate to do. And you're not going to feel inspired and energized and stay consistent if you're doing things you hate to do. And I learned from Bob Proctor that there are three different goals that people set. He calls them ABC goal setting, right? An A-type goal is what most people do. It's setting a goal that is not really exciting or inspiring. You've done it before and you're just setting another goal to do it again. I'll give you an example. Like, let's say you drive a 2015 Toyota Camry and your new goal is to buy a 2020 Toyota Camry, right? It's like, you've done it before and you're just going to buy a new version of it. Not really exciting, but that doesn't mean don't buy the car. Just not exciting.
Right.
A B type goal stretches you a little bit. And it's something that you think you can do if this person pays you and this comes through, you could hit this goal, right? So maybe it's like a 10% increase in your income. I don't know what it is, but there's some growth, not a crazy amount. The C-type goal is what we want. A C-type goal is something that is beyond your wildest dreams. It's something you really want. It's something you desire. It's something that is the opposite of what you have been taught with goal setting. It's not logical. It's not rational. It's completely irrational, but it's something you really, really want. And when you find out what that is, you will have all the energy and all the vitality, and you will be consistent because you'll be pursuing that. And the goals are not for getting. Bob Proctor has taught this. It's for growing. It's about who you become, the people you help. It's not about getting. They're for growing. And for me, you know, success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. That's what Earl Nightingale said. A worthy ideal is a goal, a C-type goal that you've fallen in love with. So I have found my C-type goal. I want to educate. I want to inspire. I want to teach 1 billion people on planet Earth about how incredible their human body is. And I want them to heal from within. And when I had that goal in mind, then it's a no-brainer when I get asked to travel to go to a conference or travel to be in a documentary or do, you know, amazing interviews like this. it's a no-brainer for me because it's aligned with that C-type goal, but it starts with knowing what that goal is, that desire, that want. So sit down and, you know, take some time, sit in a quiet room and just think about what really lights you up. And what holds people back from discovering this is as soon as they think of something that is amazing, they automatically shut themselves down thinking, who do you think you are to do that? Mm-hmm. You're not smart enough. You don't have the money. You start to rationalize, and rationalize meaning you are rationing lies to yourself. So put all that away and just let yourself dream, journal. And then once you find out what that is, here's what I do. I write it down on a goal card that I carry with me, and I write it down in the present tense where it says, I am so happy and grateful now that enter the C-type goal. And every single morning and every single night and throughout the entire day, I have this with me. I read it. I put as much feeling and energy and focus into it. And the more you do that, the more you start to take this new goal that you have fallen in love with from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind. And all these incredible things start to happen for you. Yes, you have the energy, the vitality, but then you have all these opportunities that pop up, all these synchronicities. God starts to just show up in your life like never before. But it starts with dreaming like we were when we were kids, using our imagination and then finding out what really lights you up, writing it down. And then when you do that, you'll have all of the energy, the vitality, you'll have the consistency that you were mentioning before, but it starts with understanding what that desire is.
What do you do though when you have those, that like that real inner bitch voice that starts to really doubt, especially early? Or like, what, how do you just, you know, like what, that's what's interesting is like seeing people that make it and people that don't. It's like silencing that.
Yeah.
Because there's competition in this space that you're in, and you've been able to become the authority figure in your space, which probably seemed like a daunting task at one time, but you've done it, which is like awesome, dude. But you had to have had those days where you're like, oh, I'm not as this as that person or that as that person.
Yeah. Still have that conversation, what you call the inner bitch dialogue. Yeah. I mean, we're all human, so yeah. It's going to happen. You know, in chapter 10 of the book, Metabolic Freedom, I go deep into this idea. The title of the chapter is Your Thoughts Influence Metabolism and Longevity. And in that chapter, I talk about your self-image, and it ties right into what you just said. The way you view yourself plays a big role in whether or not you're going to be able to hit your goals, whether it's weight loss or whatever it is, financial, any goal in your life. And our self-image is deep inside of our paradigm. Our paradigms are a multitude of habits that are embedded into your subconscious mind. It's essentially built from the first 7 years of your life. So for me, my self-image was, you're obese, you're not smart, you're not popular, all these, you know, negative self-talk, that inner bitch came through many, many times. So what I understand now is when I have those negative thoughts, what Zig Ziglar used to call the stinking thinking, it really has nothing to do with me, my goals, my potential. It's all about that self-image from my upbringing. And I understand this is just my body's, my subconscious way is trying to course correct back to the self-image. You see, you cannot outperform your self-image. You're never going to get the success you want if your self-image stays the same. We need to replace that self-image with something that matches that new version of yourself. So how you do that is with the affirmation. You do it with the affirmation. You imprint it enough times, constant spaced repetition. You do it enough times where you remove the old self-image and replace it with a new idea. So by writing down that goal and reading it every single day, it's not going to happen in a day. It's not going to happen in a month, but it will happen over time. And the more focus and feelings you put into it, the faster it happens for you. But most people don't understand this is happening. And Vernon Howard said, you cannot escape a prison if you don't know you're in one. So many of us are in a mental prison, and guess what? The doors are wide open. You can walk right out. But that inner dialogue you're having has nothing to do with you and your potential. It's your old self-image. So you just got to keep imprinting it. until you start to see the success. But to your point, you're not going to see it right away. So what do you do? How do you keep going when you're not seeing this manifest in your life? Well, there's two ways you're going to see this happen for you. You're going to see it in the physical form, in the form of like whatever your goals are, getting on podcasts, speaking on stages, monetary value, whatever, relationships. But there's an unseen world that changes first. And on the back of my goal card, I have a quote from Bob Proctor about faith, because faith plays a big role here. When you're not seeing it happen, you don't see your finances change, you're reading the goal card, nothing is changing. There are many changes happening, you're just not seeing it. But you have to have the faith that if you keep doing this, eventually it'll start to manifest for you. So the quote that I have is about faith. It's Lance, it's the greatest quote on faith that I ever heard. I'm going to share it with your audience.
Mm.
So here it is. Faith is the ability to see the invisible, believe in the incredible, which will permit you to achieve what the masses believe is impossible.
Mm.
Believe in the incredible, see the invisible. Right, so you just have faith that things are changing. It's changing on the inside. It's an inside-out job first. And you do it long enough, and all of a sudden, you break through. You start to get the relationships, the finances, the speaking gigs, whatever it is, but you got to just keep going. You have to have the faith that things are moving in your direction. You're planting all the seeds, and eventually, it starts to grow. So for me, that was my mindset. I might not see this progressing, but I know there's some things happening in an unseen world. I'm going to have the faith. I'm going to keep imprinting this new self-image into my subconscious mind until it replaces the old idea. And then boom, it starts to take off. And that's exactly what I've done. And I continue to do to this day.
And you're probably seeing what you visualized coming into fruition now.
100%. Like right behind me here in my office, and I'll have you here when you come to Miami. I have an entire vision board, three different vision boards. And every morning I'm in here looking at these photos. I can tell you, I have Photoshopped images of me sitting in Joe Rogan's studio. He's interviewing me. It's like right there in front of me. Breca, Diary of a CEO, Lewis House. I have like my book with New York Times bestseller on there. I have a gold YouTube plaque. I have different quotes and people that inspire me, affirmations. So every day I'm looking at this, I'm visualizing it. It's not woo-woo. This is not philosophy. This is science. It mm-hmm. works, but you got to do it continuously. You don't just do it one day and stop. You do it continuously.
Love it, bro. I'm so glad we got into Bob, because I had that circled as like,
yes,
that was,
I know you're a big fan.
I love Bob. I love Bob. Too, and bro. Dude, I just love what you're doing. So your book is out. When is it out? Metabolic Freedom.
The book comes out May 13th, 2025. However, you could pre-order it now if Perfect. This is being released beforehand. And if you do pre-order it, or maybe even if you're listening to this after the release, if you order it over at metabolicfreedombook.com, there is an entire free gift for you. There is an entire course on the metabolism that I developed myself that we're giving away for free. And we have exclusive interviews with Dr. Jason Fung, Dr. Daniel Pompa, Gary Breca, Cynthia Thurlow, and Megan Ramos on the metabolism in that course. So this is a $1,000 retail value that we give away for free when you go to metabolicfreedombook.com and order the book, whether it's a pre-order or regular order. It's available on hardcover, Kindle, and Audible. I just finished the narration for the Audible as well. So I would love for your audience to go to metabolicfreedombook.com.
Awesome. We'll have that all in there. Yeah, I was following along on your stories there. The reading of the Audible. That's quite the process.
Pain in the ass, bro. Pain in the ass. Oh, it was so difficult. I spent like 20 plus hours in the studio. And by the end of the recording, it's like an edit. It's going to be like 6 or 7 hours. And it's tough. So when you have an author that narrates the Audible, you got to know that it was really tough for them, and have a lot of respect for them. I have a lot of respect for authors who narrate their Audible. It's really, really tough to do.
I think it's really great to do. I think you want to hear the voice of the person. Yes. It's one thing I never did with my book for some reason. I just never got around to it. But next one.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that. Next one. You got to do it. Yeah.
Brother, thank you so much, man. And your podcast, massive. Your YouTube, massive. Metabolic Freedom. Your YouTube is just Benazadi, or is it Metabolic Freedom as well? Or is it still Benazadi, Keto Camp?
Yeah. Benazadi.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Yeah, we changed it to Benazadi from Keto Camp. But there is the podcast is Metabolic Freedom, and then the video podcast is on that same YouTube channel.
Awesome, dude. All right. What is one piece of advice that you can leave our listeners with before we go?
Yeah, before I give that, I just want to acknowledge you, bro. I love your work. I love your consistency, your podcasts. I mean, you've been an incredible friend and mentor, and just, I believe it was 2018 when we first started to connect, and I've enjoyed seeing you grow. I've enjoyed our relationship and hanging out with you when you come to Miami, bro. It's just, you're a rock star. And I know a lot of people in the health space, and not all of them are the same persona on social media, but I can tell you that Lance is the same person, that same authentic person who cares about you and society. He's the same person in real life. So I love you and I appreciate you, and it's an honor to be back on your show. So I want to first say thank you.
Brother, thank you.
The question is great. Yeah. The question is great, because I would say this: we have 60,000 thoughts a day, according to psychiatrists, and your thoughts are very, very powerful. They could influence disease or influence health and longevity with a single thought. Your thoughts, according to Dr. Bruce Lipton, have the ability to penetrate your cells and communicate with your DNA. So if it's a hateful thought, angry thought, a bitter thought, that signal sent to your DNA produces inflammatory proteins in a second, which shortens your lifespan. But if the thought is grateful, loving, abundant, happy, same signal sent, now the proteins are anti-inflammatory, protects your cells, extends your lifespan. So if you have 60,000 thoughts a day, I believe the greatest opportunity you have is within those thoughts to heal your body. You have 60,000 opportunities every day to put your body in a healing state. So with that being said, you are the most influential person you'll speak to today, have the best conversation ever, and use those thoughts in your favor versus working against you.
Boom, that's a mic drop. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Ezzati, Metabolic Freedom. Love you, bro. Appreciate you so much,
Lance. Appreciate you. Thank you so much, Lance.
Thanks, everybody.